Hello, Internet friend. I'm David Revelle, and this is ValueSide for Wednesday, August 9. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSide.com. Well, today, the cost of Russian sanctions. For over 9 years, the United States has issued a steadily increasing set of sanctions against the Russian Federation. Now, it all began in 2014, when the breakaway Republic of Crimea voted to leave Ukraine and join Russia. The United States objected to the referendum by issuing its first set of sanctions. Now, when President Biden came to power, the scope and reach of sanctions took on an immediate urgency. Just 3 months after his inauguration, the president issued Executive Order No. 14024. This executive order prohibited any Russian property from being, quote, transported, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt, unquote. Put briefly, this meant that all Russian assets that were deposited, for instance, in a U.S. bank, could not be moved or transferred back to Russia. Immediately, the U.S. Treasury seized $30 billion worth of Russian citizens' funds, and just recently, the U.S. appears to have captured the $300 billion of the Russian central bank reserves held here in the U.S. The executive order was signed on April 15, 2021, 10 months before Russia invaded Ukraine. Immediately upon the Russian invasion of Ukraine, these sanctions were dramatically enhanced. President Biden cut off all Russian oil and gas imports to the U.S. The Europeans instituted new, stiffer restrictions on Russian exports to the EU. As one American diplomat put it, this was economic shock and awe, a reference to the overwhelming victory of U.S. armed forces over Iraq in that war. President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, predicted that the Russian economy would be reduced to shambles. And that, of course, was the objective, led mainly by the United States, NATO, and the European Union, attempted to degrade the Russian economy so that they could no longer wage war. In the most recent press reports by the U.S. Treasury Department, this country has targeted Russia with over 300 sanctions. In the words of Treasury Department and the United States, it is, quote, strengthening the unprecedented global sanctions and other restrictive economic measures to degrade further the Russian Federation's capacity to wage war against Ukraine. Indeed, Treasury is spot on when they say that it is an unprecedented effort to bring Russia to its knees economically. The entirety of the European Union, the G7, NATO, and the United States have applied the most severe economic restrictions ever against Russia. Even the economic boycott against South Africa's policy of apartheid back in the 1960s pales in comparisons to the sanctions currently applied to Russia. In addition to seizing Russian financial assets, the U.S.-led coalition has sought to cut off sales of Russian commodities such as petroleum and agricultural products such as wheat and grains and petrol-based fertilizers. Additionally, the U.S. has sought to isolate Russia from the global financial markets, chiefly by ousting Russia from the SWIFT settlement system. So how are these sanctions working 18 months into the war and 14 years into the overall sanctions implementation? U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen expressed the objective well when she wrote, quote, from the beginning of President Putin's illegal and unprovoked war, our global coalition has focused on supporting Ukraine while degrading Russia's ability to conduct its invasion. So is that true? Have the sanctions degraded Russia's ability to conduct this invasion? It's not readily apparent. Despite President Biden's offhand comment that, quote, Putin is losing the war, that does not appear to be the case. The much-touted spring offensive by the Ukrainian army has carried over to midsummer without any significant gains in territory or defeat of Russian troops. the Russians have dug in a well-fortified line of defense throughout their capture of towns and villages. And reports are the Ukrainian forces have been unable to penetrate those defensive lines. There are rumors that the Russian troops may be driving forward in the northwest part of the extended battlefront. Admittedly, here in the U.S., there are differing points of view on how the war is proceeding. But one fact remains, sanctions do not appear to be degrading the Russian effort to fight the war. It is reported that Russia has been firing 60,000 artillery shells per day. At the same time, the United States has exhausted supplies of its most effective artillery weapon, the 155mm shells used by most U.S. field guns. Before the Ukrainian war began, the U.S. produced fewer than 15,000 of these shells per month, or about the same number as Russia shoots off before lunch on any given day. Interestingly, some countries have avoided the U.S. sanctions and supported Russia's war effort. Most controversial among these has been Iran's move to supply fighting drones to Russia. Whether these are produced in Iran or Russia is an open question, but there can be no question that these drones have been one of the most critical weapons in Russia's arsenal in fighting Ukraine. However, this is a discussion principally centered on economic strategy, the U.S. sanctions on Russia, and it's in the economic sphere that we see some of the most curious results. As Treasury Secretary Yellen put it, the objective of the sanctions are to degrade Russia's ability to fight the war, and to do that by degrading Russia's economy. One would expect to see those results in the most recent economic reports coming out of Moscow. But that's not the case. In the information from the International Monetary Fund, Russia's economy is gaining strength, not losing it. While it's true that Russia was in an evident recession last year, with their GDP falling by more than 2%, that looks to have reversed this year. Twice, the IMF has raised its estimate of Russian economic growth for 2023. In the most recent assessment, Russia's GDP is estimated to be increasing by 1.5%, a rate that would yield a Russian GDP, using the purchasing power parity calculation, of $5.5 trillion, and it would be among the highest in Europe. What's more, while most of Europe, especially Germany, is projected to fall into recession next year, the IMF expects Russia, on the other hand, to have a very respectable 2% economic growth, better than most of the European nations, and twice the level predicted for the U.S. That's right, the IMF has cut American GDP growth to just 1%, or half the Russian growth rate for next year. Now, the national calculation for GDP is a highly complex equation, incorporating hundreds of thousands of data points. But one remaining item is a glaring distinction between these two economic superpowers, and that is their respective national debts. Russia is fighting this war in Ukraine without incurring any significant debt. In the latest IMF figures, total government debt in Russia stands at just over $300 billion. Russia's debt to GDP is a mere 15%, or more than 100% lower than the U.S. debt level. The current U.S. government debt, according to the U.S. debt clock, stands at $32 trillion, a number that whirs across the screen so fast you can hardly read it. Our debt to GDP stands at 118%. The interest on that debt now exceeds $1 trillion annually, an expense that reduces our projected economic growth. Russia does not have this debt bomb, a debt bomb that is exploding here in the United States. So the United States implemented a massive sanctions program to slow the Russian economy, but fate and poor policies applied an even more enormous debt bomb that is slowing America's economic growth. And that's The Value Side for Wednesday, August 9th. For all of our articles and podcasts, visit ValueSide.com. Bayside is independently written.